Today, I would like to start my show by taking a brief moment to say thank you to my first Patreon supporter, Victoria K. I just want to say thank you to you. I really appreciate it. And for anybody else who becomes a Patreon, you will get a name shout out in an episode as well. So be sure to check out my Patreon page. And without any further ado, let's get started. It is eerie in the deep tunnels, lonely. Beyond the roar of the drill, I hear the voices of my friends, all older. But I cannot see them a half click above me in the darkness. They drill high above, near the mouth of the tunnel that I've carved, descending with hooks and lines to dangle along the sides of the tunnel to get at the small veins of helium-3. They mine with meter-long drills, gobbling up the chaff. The work still requires mad dexterity of foot and hand, but I'm the earner in this crew. I am the hell diver. It takes a certain kind, and I'm the youngest anyone can remember. That's a quote from Red Rising by Pierce Brown. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler.
Hi, I'm Bethany Finger, the host of Prince Kai Thampod, a Marissa Meyer Book Club podcast. Join me every week during my read-along journey through all of the books by author Marissa Meyer, one chapter at a time, spoiler-free. Each episode will feature a different guest, new fan art, and laughter and joy through reading. You can find Prince Kai Thampod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all other listening platforms. And now, back to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat, Season 2. Thank you so much for being here. I am very excited. Today, I am finally going to cover Pierce Brown's Red Rising. I absolutely love this book. I love this whole series. And I am desperately waiting for book number 6 to come out, as I'm sure is everybody who is reading this right now. But today, I have a fun guest for you guys. Guys, I have with me today Amanda from Fictional Hangover Podcast. Hey, Amanda, welcome to YA Book Chat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Why don't you get us started by telling everybody a little bit about your podcast?
Well, Fictional Hangover is a weekly podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. On more than one occasion, we have been told that our episodes have helped teenagers cheat on their homework. So that, you can say that either way you want, but that is how in-depth we get with our book discussions. Wow. You can find us on fictionalhangover.com, and we're on all social media and on your podcast player of choice. If you use us to cheat on your homework, tell me, because I like to know that.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious. Oh man. I don't know if somebody ever told me that. I would be like, okay, great. I don't want to tell your teachers. Oh my goodness. And I will, for everybody listening, I will put links to Fictional Hangover, social media and their website and podcast in the show notes for today. So you guys will have links for all of that. All right. So really quick, before we get started, what are you currently reading, Amanda?
So I am finishing up Harrow Lake by Kat Ellis. It's a fantastic, spooky book. We're about to feature Kat Ellis on our podcast. We're gonna have a chat with Kat Ellis and Dawn Kurtigich. They're both excellent British YA horror authors. So if you like horror, check out their books.
That sounds really cool. And it's a time of year right now for horror.
Oh yeah. Right. We've been covering spooky books all this month. So
really fun. That's really fun. I just started reading The Beautiful by Renee. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Every time I look at it, I'm like, I have no idea. I can't. Anyway, but it's really good. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm reading that, and then I am listening to, in my car to and from work, because I have a 45-minute drive to work every day. So I'm currently listening to the Coldest Girl in Cold Town by Holly Black, which is a vampire book. So I am very excited, but already within the first like five chapters was yelling at the main character, like, you're an idiot, stop doing that. So I can see the direction this book is going to go, but I think, but it's fun. So
That was a good book. I read it just right after it came out, and the audio is excellent. I'm glad that you listen to audiobooks. Audiobooks are my favorite.
Okay. Did you, I don't know how old you are, so we'll just, I'm 40, all right? Just admitted to everybody listening, but whatever.
Good. I'm about to turn 36, so I'm not that far behind you.
Okay, so did you ever watch in the 90s that sitcom Step by Step?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you know that the girl, Christine Larkin, who was, she played like the tomboy sister on Step by Step, that is who is the narrator for The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, for the audiobook.
No, but don't you love when you find that out? You're like, oh my God, I know this person.
Yes. I started listening to it. I hadn't even looked at it. I just got it. I put it in, and because it's a CD. It's on CD. It's not like, you know, a regular one. So, and she said her name and I was like, stop it. I know that name. And then I looked and was like, oh my gosh, that's the girl from Step by Step. That's hilarious.
I did the same thing with Don Kurtigich's book, The Dead House.
Okay.
Christian Coulson is the male narrator of that. And if you are a huge giant Harry Potter fan like I am, you will know that Christian Coulson is Tom Riddle in Chamber of Secrets. And I was like, oh my God, it's Tom Riddle. Oh my God, it's Tom Riddle. Oh my God, it's Tom Riddle.
So fun. I love that. That's fun. All right. Well, let's dive into this book. So just as a reminder for everyone, we are going to talk spoiler-free for about 10 to 15 minutes, and then we will dive into spoilers, and I will be sure to let you know before we hit our spoiler zone. So first, I am going to give you guys a brief overview of Red Rising, again, by Pierce Brown. So our main character, his name is Darrow, and he is a Red. So he is the lowest caste in this color-coded society of the future that he lives in. And Darrow, just like all of his fellow Reds, live under the surface of Mars. Okay, so live underground in Mars. And he works really hard all day, believing that he's working towards making the surface of Mars livable. Because as far as he knows, the Reds have been working. You cannot live on the surface of Mars. So they're working really hard to make it livable. However, Darrow ends up discovering that he has been lied to for his entire life, that people have actually been living on the surface of Mars for a very long time, and that he is essentially nothing more than a slave to a very elite and decadent ruling class. So inspired by a longing for justice and being driven by the memory of a lost love, Darrow sacrifices everything that he has to infiltrate what's called the Institute, which is a proving ground for the dominant gold caste, where the next generation of humanity's overlords struggle for power. And so there, he's going to stop at nothing to bring down his enemies, even if it means he has to become one of them in order to do so. So this is a very interesting book. It's long. There's a lot that happens in it, but it's really good too at the same time. So Amanda and I are going to talk a little bit, just a bit kind of about what our overall thoughts are and what we thought of the book. So Amanda, why don't you go first?
Okay. Look, you said it's really long and it is. It's so long. And like, I love it and I love the world building, but it's such a slow start to the series.
It is.
I
agree completely. Like, this was my second time reading it, and it was just the same as the first time. Like, the first time, the reason I had trouble the first time, and I was because I had just come off of reading the Red Queen series by Victoria Aveyard, and she has a divided society by color as well. Now, there's,
actually happens to be the color of their blood, which is not the color of blood in this one. But it's very similar story where, you know, the reds are the lowest. Then you have the gold or the silver who are the highest. And then, you know, like the reds decide to rise up and have this mutiny or whatever, right? So it's, I was reading it and I was like, this is the same thing I just read. Like, what is going on? But my girlfriend who recommended it was like, no, no, you have to keep reading it. So I went through and I finished reading it and I did really like it, but it is, but then even again, the second time when I was reading it, I was just like, yeah, this is just a really slow start. It just,
yeah, I'm drags. So glad that you said that. Like, I felt bad because I do love it. I love it so much, but I'm like, oh, the first one. Why are we talking about the first one? Nobody listen to me. Great. It's great. Everyone go and read it or listen to it. Tim Reynolds did a fantastic job with the audio. So
yeah,
top notch.
Well, and here's the funny thing though, is like, I feel like the rest of the books in the series are so much better than this one. So it's like, you have to trudge through this one to get the background story that you need. Yeah. But then once you hit book two, it's like smooth sailing from there on out. And I finished book five and I was like, I am dead now. I have no idea where he's going to go from here. I feel destroyed in every way possible. And now I'm like, I got to sit here and wait like a whole nother year before the next one comes out. So, you know, there's that.
I've only read the original trilogy. I haven't started the second trilogy yet. So, I mean, I love spoilers, so it's totally fine if you spoil, obviously. Don't listen to Fictional Hangover, but yeah, I haven't read the two newest ones yet. I need to. I'm excited about it, but
yeah. They're really good, and it is definitely like its own trilogy. I mean, you know, it's based off of the same story, but book four starts 10 years after the ending of book three. So, so it's, you know, Darrow and company are a whole lot older at this point. They're more mature. They're still living in this world of war and all the things, but there's a lot of different stuff that happens too. And we get some different characters that are brought in that are really interesting. Book four is great. Book five, I think that Pierce Brown was just out to destroy all of his listeners, any way that he could. It was just like one of those books. I was tearing my hair out, wanted to throw it across the floor, yelling at the book, yelling at Pierce Brown as I'm reading it. Like, what are you doing to me, dude? Like, I mean, it was just, and I can't handle this book kind of book. And then I got to the end and I went, oh, what the heck is going to happen in the next one? I mean, he did everything in this one. So where could this story possibly go? And I don't even know when book six is coming out. I know he's writing it, but that's all I know. He doesn't give any clues or anything on Instagram about his writing. So it's very frustrating.
Well, now I'm super excited to read it. Maybe that's what I'll move on to next when I have a gap in between. Yeah.
It is really good. I do like Red Rising a lot. I feel like the second half of the book was a lot faster and a lot better than the first half of the book. Because we have the beginning is really just kind of like establishing the characters, some of the characters, and establishing like the reasoning behind Darrow and some of the Reds wanting to, you know, rise up against the Golds. And so we have that. But I felt like once I got to a certain point in the book where he gets to the Institute and he's in the Institute and all of this stuff and the fighting there starts to happen, it got a little bit better for me. It was almost little bit of a hint of Hunger Games-ish. So it got better, but it is definitely the slower book in the series. But it does have positives too. I mean, I really like that there are very strong characters. Mm. I like how Pierce Brown differentiated between the language of like the Reds and the Golds. They have specific words and ways that they speak and mannerisms and things that are very distinctive from each other. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I really wish that, you know, there's obviously a time where Darrow is a Red, and then there's the time where Darrow is in the Institute. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about him being a Red.
Yeah.
And I feel like you know, that's the first part. We're building the world. We're setting everything up. I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
I need more.
I agree. I think it would be really cool to know like more about his father and his father's story mm-hmm. and what his relationship like was like with him. And then even because Darryl says, you know, he started working in the mines when he was 13, you know, mm-hmm. what was it like to be 13 and to start doing that? And even just his relationship with EO, what was it like when they were little and they were friends and buddies hanging out, you know, like, and she said she always knew that she was going to marry him and she waited to marry him. And I definitely would love more of that too. I think that would be really cool. He should do like a novella or something, a small sure. little prequel novella. I want him to do that. I don't know if he will, but he should. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I want to know more about EO.
Yeah,
and
right?
why she made the decisions that she made.
I agree. You know, we found out stuff about her, but I should say there wasn't enough of her background, enough of her right. motivation. Like, I didn't get enough of her motivation, like why she thought some of the things that she thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to know more about that.
I would too. I do like, though, I do feel like Pierce Brown did a great job with building the story and with building his world. And he has a lot of really great visual imagery and descriptions. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some things that we'll talk about later, one of my favorite parts of the book, that happen later where it's just such a vivid picture that he paints that there's no way you cannot see this, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I can totally picture what it would look like if it were made into a movie or a TV series. And it's great. He does a really good job of that, I thought.
Yeah. I'm dying right now, not mentioning spoilers. Like, I don't know how to not spoil things.
If you accidentally say, I almost just said something about EO. So yeah. So one other thing that kind of bothered me a little bit about this book, and actually a little bit about the whole series, like it's the only thing that I can say for the whole series that I'm like, okay, I don't mind the fact that we have this color-coded society with different mm-hmm. colors, right? But there are a lot of different colors.
It's like there's so many colors.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's at least, I wrote them all down. There's at least 11. And I'm like, I cannot keep track of all of these colors. Like Victoria Aveyard gave us 2 colors. 2. Totally yeah. manageable, right? Like yeah. I can even handle maybe 4. 11 though? Like
no, there's 14.
Okay, 14. I just counted mm-hmm. 11, so there's more. I missed them. Even my point. Like, I can't keep track of them all.
Yeah, but then in Red Queen, they have a bunch of different powers. So True. It's hard to keep track of all of their powers that they have. And even the powers that they have that are similar, they're also different at the same time. So you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
What kind of electricity do you have? What does it do?
That is very true. Yes, but they kept saying the gold. I feel like the only ones that I could actually remember all the time what they were and like what they did were the reds, the golds, and the pinks. Because the pinks, how are you going to not remember the pinks and how they pleasure people? Like this yes. is, I was yes. like, yeah, ooh. I remember this one. Well, and then the obsidians, because the obsidians are like the big dudes, you know, like the
yeah,
big monsters.
They're giants.
Yes.
They're literal giants.
They are.
With
which is really
multiple
fun.
Fingers.
And I really love in the later books, he really gets into the obsidians more and it's fantastic. Like,
awesome.
Yeah. Especially in books 4 and 5. It's great. I loved that. So my only other like little nitpicky thing is that in this book, there is one like secret that somebody has that Darryl never finds out what it is. Like we get told that this person has a secret, but then he never finds out what it is. We never find out what it is. And everybody is left hanging like, that's you just left this huge thing hanging. Like she had some secret and now I don't know what it is. And neither does he. And it's the end of the book. Like, really? We do find out in a later book. I think it's book 2. Is it book 2?
I think it's book 2.
Yeah. So at least it wasn't too much further down the line. But the first time I read this through, I was like, well, that's annoying. What was yes, the secret?
I agree with you on that one. Like, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. Why would you keep that secret? That's right? Not a very nice secret to keep.
No, it wasn't. All right. Well, I am ready to dive in and talk about spoilers, and I'm sure you are too.
Good. So. Yes. Thank you.
All right. So for all of my listeners, if you have not yet read the book, Red Rising, and you do not want it to be spoiled for you, then I would suggest stop listening here and come back and listen to the rest of this episode after you have read the book. But of course, if you've read it, by all means, continue listening. Or if you just don't care about spoilers, then please keep listening, because we are really going to dive in now. So, yes. Okay. So, yeah. So, EO.
Freaking EO, man. I do not like EO. I was so upset with how she handled things. And, like, why would you keep that secret? Don't you think that if Darrow knew, he would be so much more full of rage and be like, yeah, freaking turn me into a cold. I am there. I am tearing heads off.
But she never tells him. She never tells him. She tells her sister instead. But yeah, I agree though, because I feel like she was so, the other thing is she was so passionate about her beliefs and wanting him to do more and being a martyr. But yet, we didn't really see enough of her, which was really annoying. Like, she dies right away. And I was like, but I was just getting to know her. Why does she have to die so soon? Can't you give it another chapter or two? I mean, not that this book needs any more length to it, because it's definitely long.
Don't add more to that part. I was curious about how, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, needing to know more of EO's story, but like, how did she even find out about all of this stuff? How did she, you know,
Yeah. Like, that's what I wonder too, because, okay, does she really know what's going on, or does she just have like a general sense of we are really oppressed by the golds, because they come down in their grav boots and float up there above everybody like they're all high and mighty and so much better than everybody else, and they tell them what to do, boss them around, you know, they're oppressed because they don't have all the food. And then the Laurel is always rigged so that Gamma always wins.
Oh, that's the worst. Oh, I felt so bad for Darrow. And he's like, yeah, I've got a surprise for you. I'm totally going to win the Laurel. No,
it didn't happen.
Whoops.
I know. And you feel bad because he's like talking about how he really wants to win the Laurel so that EO can have like sugar and more food, because she looks so skinny and so sad and sickly. And I'm like, that is really, really sad. And then they didn't win. And it was like, oh, and they worked so hard.
And he almost died going to fix that gas leak or whatever it was. Like, no, not worth it. Not worth it, man.
They could die from the gas leaks. He could die from getting bit by a pit viper. I mean, did they say, I don't remember, are those spiders poisonous, right? The ones that they collect the webs from? So it's like, there's so many dangers down there. And then they didn't even win it. I don't know. I think maybe EO was just like feeling this just general sense of we are an oppressed people. I don't think she necessarily knew about what was going on the surface, but I think it was just more of a, we are their slaves kind of feeling anyway.
Okay.
That's the impression I got, but
I was kind of thinking like maybe she did somehow know about what was coming. And then I kind of thought, you know, cause you know, we're getting ready to talk about this. And so I'm listening to it and really thinking critically about it. Like,
yeah.
So did EO know, and she was going to go and be turned into a gold too, but then Darrow broke her neck too hard and she didn't survive the hanging and they couldn't bring her back. Like, you know, whoops, did that happen? And now they're like, well, we're stuck with Darrow.
I don't know though, because she talks about dying for a purpose. Like, and she even tells Darrow, she says, you're not meant to be a martyr. You wouldn't see the point to it. But then she knows what she's going to do. Like when they get caught coming out of the tunnel, she knows, because then when they go to get their whippings in front of everybody, she tells him, like she looks at him and tells him, you know, I love you and it's okay. Like she with her eyes, like she tells him, sorry, I'm going to die right now, but it's for a reason, you know? So like I think she wanted to die. Like she wanted to be a sacrifice and be that martyr to show him and to show everybody else what that something needed to change.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I agree with you on that. Yeah. But I was wondering like, well, yeah, she's going to die for a purpose to come back as a gold and go and do greater things. But then,
yeah,
then at the same time, she had her secret that I'm not going to spoil again for everyone. So then I don't know.
I do have to say though, okay, I want to read this because this is like one of the saddest things ever, but so yeah, of course I'm going to read it. Right. But also just because Pierce Brown, I just really liked the way that he wrote it. Cause it talks about this is when she's getting her lashes, and he says, as the 13th lash falls, as I mumble for her not to do it, Io stares into my eyes one last moment, and then she begins her song. It is a quiet sound, a mournful sound, like the song the deep mines whisper as wind moves in the abandoned shafts. It is a song of death and lament, the song that is forbidden, the song I've only heard once before, and for this they will kill her. Then he talks about her voice and how it's like so beautiful and soft, and it's like a siren's unearthly call, but in a beautiful way, not in a I'm going to kill you kind of way, like the sirens do. But I just really like his description. Again, his descriptive words and visuals I really like a lot.
Yeah, he's very talented.
Yes. And he does a good job with, even in the short amount of time that we have her, he does do a good job with painting us a really good picture of Io. Because Darrow has a description, like, it's right away in the first chapter. It's like the second page where he talks about her and how sweet she is and remembers her when they were younger and he'd call her little Io and they'd play together and it was really sweet. And I was like, that's so sweet. And then like 5 pages later, oh, she's dead. Like, not nice, Pierce Brown. What are you doing? Killing somebody so quickly. But, you know, the story would not have been able to advance if she wasn't. So
no. But now we got to get out of Mars, or out of the inside of Mars.
I agree. Yes.
We need to get to my favorite part.
The Institute.
The carving.
Oh, yes. Okay. This is like the weirdest. I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, he goes in looking one way. Harmony and Dancer are like, hey, guess what? We're going to turn you into a gold. And he goes and see Mickey. By the way, I totally love Mickey. Like, I'm like in love with that man. He is he is weird and quirky, but he's also sweet. What is he called, Darrow? Like, darling or something? He calls him, like, sweetheart. He has a nickname for him. And I'm just like, he's just funny, too. He's just fun. But he's, like, literally carving him into a gold. Like, I can't.
Yeah. And, like, you think of how little all the reds are because they're, you know, engineered for cramped spaces.
Right.
And then he comes out and he is, like, 6.5, 7 feet tall and got other people's eyeballs and all sorts of crazy stuff happens. But yeah, I loved the carving because I just like terrible, gruesome things like that. So super enjoyed it.
But it's funny too, because Darrow asks Dancer and Harmony, how many reds has this worked on? How many has this been successful on or whatever? And they were like, oh, there have been 97 reds before you who died while trying this. And he's like, I think at that point I'd be like, I'm out. See ya. Like, you killed almost 100 people before me trying this. I don't think so. Why do you think I'm going to be special? Right. And Dancer's just like, we just have a good feeling about you.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, because that's exactly what would make me choose to go under the knife and be changed completely, right? Yeah, you just have a good feeling.
We have a good feeling. It's going to be fine.
No.
Thank goodness it was, though.
I know. I mean, you had to know because there wouldn't be any more of a book. So it's like, you know that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, the suspense is really just for Darryl.
Yes. Would you do that if you could? Would you be carved?
It would have to be for a really, 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 really good reason.
Is it because your 16-year-old wife died?
Well, that would do it.
All you need.
I guess if my 16-year-old spouse died, that might do it. And well, because the other thing is too, he's 16, right? So when you're 16, you don't always make the most rational thoughts or decisions, I should say. Yeah. So at 16, 97 people died before me. You have a good feeling? All right, let's do it. You know what I mean? Like, all for EO. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. But I do like too, like how Dancer has to find a good way to motivate Darryl to do it, because otherwise he knows he's not going to do it. So he like kind of plays a guilt trip on him, you know, like he tells him, well, your wife is dead. But then he says, you know, when she died, she didn't just give you a vendetta, you know, like she doesn't just want you to get revenge. She gave you her dream. And so he tells him, you're its keeper, its maker. So don't be spitting anger and hate. You're not fighting against them. You're fighting for her dream and for your family who is still alive. So, I mean, how the heck is Darryl going to say no to that? You know what I mean? Like, Dancer just played on his heartstrings there.
Yeah, you can't say no.
No, it's like, we're done. Okay, Dancer, anything for my dead wife.
I'm glad that he was smart enough to adapt in the way that he needed to. You know, he only slips up once with his gory dam.
Yes.
Only once in the entire thing does he slip up with that. And then Severo's like, yeah, I got you, bro. But, you know, he made it through the testing and they're like, did you cheat? Did you cheat? Because you got all the answers right. Did you cheat? And he's like, no, I didn't. Why are you here bothering me? I'm a gold. Don't bother me about my test results.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad that he was able to do that. I mean, Darryl's a pretty cool character.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I really liked him a lot. The part that I hated more, hating for him, for Darryl, and thinking about it, like if it were me too, was when they had to go through the passage and he had to kill Julian in order to get, and I was like, this is the worst thing ever. Like, cause can you imagine? I would probably be the one to die. Like, I just don't know. I mean, I just was reading that part every time I read it, you know, cause again, this was not my first time reading it. And even still, I was like, oh man, like it's so horrible. And you just feel the guilt of that on him. Plus then he carries that guilt with him the whole book because of Cassius.
Yes.
You know, which is like a whole other thing.
Come on. I mean, Julian had to die and you knew it was going to happen when they go in there together, because like you said earlier, if we didn't have Darryl, we would not have a book.
That's very true.
So you know, he's got to kill Julian that we all immediately loved.
Oh, yeah. He is. See, it's like this is how it goes. The character who comes on, who you fall in love with super fast, is always the one who dies.
Yep. Murdered immediately. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way about Pax. Oh, Talumanos.
Oh, I love Pax.
I know. Pax was so great.
And it was just not fun when he died. I was like, you're ripping my heart out and throwing it on the floor right now. Don't kill him.
Yeah.
We had there were some sad deaths in this.
Yeah, there were.
With Pax and Julian. And then other circumstances, like when they're in the house and Titus is like raping all the women. I'm like, excuse me. What are you doing? Like,
excuse me, can you stop that, please?
Yeah, that would be great. I know. It's so, but I did like, I liked when we got, you know, we get through the passage, and then we finally get them to the Institute, and they're there for like, what, like a year and a half or something?
100 years. This is the part that dragged for me.
Right? I mean, I liked it. I liked some of what happened, but some of it, yeah, was really slow. Some of it I was like, I don't care about this part. Like, why do I need to know how many houses, what, how long they were in the forest, who's hiding where. I don't care what they're eating or not eating.
I only cared about Pax throwing horses.
Yeah.
getting inside of dead horses.
Yes.
Wearing wolf skins. That was pretty cool.
That was
really just Pax throwing the horses.
That was really cool. He's like, yeah. You're like, all right. So Pax just threw a horse. That's great. Yes. He is super strong. He is this beast. He is a beast. yeah. Well, and I so I have a couple characters who came into the Institute who I like loved right away. And it's because we find out they're related, so it makes sense. So Fichtner, as soon as Fichtner came onto the picture, I was like, oh, I just love you. You're hilarious. I love your sense of humor. I love your, I really don't give a crap kind of attitude, right? Then Severo, oh my gosh. He is, I've read all five of these books right now. He is still, throughout all of them, my favorite character.
I'm glad. Severo is my favorite character too. I mean, apart from Pax.
Well, yes.
Pax doesn't make it.
No.
Yeah,
so you got to pick somebody else.
I love Severo so much.
Oh my gosh.
Especially some of the stuff he does later that I'm not spoiling, but yes.
Yes. He is just my favorite. Like, he's just, he's the first one, you know, to wear the wolf skin. He kills the wolves. He's got his wolf pack, the Howlers, which, come on, how perfect is that?
Yeah, so fantastic.
They all wear the wolf coats, the wolf skins. He, like, prowls through the wood. He's just so sneaky and sly, and he just doesn't give a crap about anything. He has my favorite dialogue of all the characters too. Like, he's just the smartest, the wittiest. He's just got the best lines ever. Yeah. He's just, and then of course, you know, you find out Fichtner's his dad and you're like, oh, well, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yes.
It's perfect. What's funny is the first time I read it, I didn't catch the hints that were there. Mm-hmm. When I read it the second time, I went, oh, that's a hint right there that Fichtner's his dad. We just don't find out about it till 15 chapters from now. But I picked all those up the second time.
I like Severo. He kind of reminds me of like a trickster sort of Loki type character.
Yes.
Yes. I'm in love. I'm in love with Severo, even though he's the goblin and crawling around in the sewers.
Oh God.
Whatever, man.
Twice. That's the thing. It wasn't just once. It was twice. They had to crawl through the poop slop. And I was like, oh, you poor things.
But then they use that smell against the people that they're attacking. Like, we just showed up in their house and we're covered in poo. How are they going to deal with it?
It's fine. Oh, yeah. So Severo's just... I just am in love with him. And I know who should play him at least. Okay. If they were to make these into movies, the problem is the guy who I would want to play him like the whole time can't because he's too old to play like 16-year-old Severo, but he could totally play him in older Severo as older Severo, like second trilogy. Have you watched The Umbrella Academy on Netflix?
No, I haven't. But my co-host, Claire, is like, Amanda, what are you doing? Why are you reading all these books? You need to go and watch The Umbrella Academy.
I highly agree with her that you need to sit down and binge watch the entire thing. And you will be able to binge watch it because it goes fast. Okay. So in The Umbrella Academy, the actor who plays Klaus, hold on. Now I have to pull up my IMDb because...
I just pulled up IMDb too. Like, okay, who am I looking for?
I have it on my phone because I just look all the time.
Me too. Yeah,
Robert that guy could... Sheehan. Robert Sheehan.
That guy could totally... Yeah.
Well, and when you watch The Umbrella Academy and you see his character of Klaus, you will get it even more. Like... The second I started watching The Umbrella Academy, he comes on the screen, starts doing his thing. I was like, holy crap, it's Severo. It was perfect.
Like, yep.
He is Severo. The only thing is he's too old to play 16-year-old Severo. But, you know, he can play him when he's older.
Or they could make him. And they're golds. Who knows really how old they are? They're all stretched out and,
right,
you know, super strong. So who can say really?
He would be perfect. I love Klaus like I love Severo. Okay, we'll say that.
You've sold me. I need to go right now. I need to leave you in the middle of your episode and go watch Umbrella.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, fine. I won't leave yet.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so I want to talk about, you mentioned briefly the hiding inside the horses.
Yes.
That was my favorite part of this book. Like, besides Severo, because I felt like, you know, they're going in to capture Mustang's house. I don't remember which house she was in. And
Minerva?
Is that? Oh, yes, you're right. It's Minerva. They're going to capture House Minerva. They're like, we got to be creative about this, how we do it. She's all looking in the grass. Nope, nobody's here. They're sewn into the dead horses. And they pop out of the dead. That was like the best moment ever.
Yeah.
It was my favorite.
That was fantastic. That was really fantastic.
What I love too is that, like, that's a very, obviously very strategic war plan, right? Mm-hmm. And he carries that through because later when Darrow gets ousted, you know, when Cassius finds out that he killed Julian and he like tries to kill him and then Darrow's on his own, then he hooks up with Mustang, right? And they're building their own army. So then later they do that with the snow. Like they build little snow tunnels and hide in the snow. The first thing I thought was, well, number one, that's ingenious. But number two, how did you not die of frostbite being buried in the snow all night long?
Well, they were all cuddled up.
This is true.
I love that when Pax is like,
I know,
snuggling, like, oh, Pax, you're so great.
It is great. I have to tell you something about Pax. It's not a spoiler, but just to say that his family makes an appearance in later books. So if you have not read the second trilogy, there's more motivation because they come about and it's great. They are just as wonderful as he is. So that was like one of my favorite things. But the other thing too is that Pierce Brown carries on with Darrow that really strategic planning and whatnot into the rest of the books too. So I really like that. And it gets even better. Like he gets smarter and even comes up with even more creative different ideas that work really well. So I just love that, that seeing that development in Darrow and the use of that, because it's just very creative. I mean, he sewed his men into dead horses.
He has so many clever plans though. And you know, it's good that he's got his team with him who's helping him carry out all of these schemes, but like the one where they go to get the jackal and like is that when everyone's pretending to be drunk or is that,
yes,
or is that later?
No, that's with the jackal.
Okay. And then he stabs the jackal through the hand and is like, yeah, I'd like to see you get out of this. And then he cuts off his own hand. You're like, what? Okay.
Yeah. So they're all a bit crazy. Like Darrow is definitely crazy in his own way, but then you've got Severo and the Howlers who are crazy because they who is gonna put themselves inside of a dead stinking animal? You know how many times they probably puked while they were in there and then they're crawling through the poop. I mean, you gotta be crazy. And then the jackal is just a whole nother level of crazy, cutting his hand off.
Well, I mean, all the proctors were treating the jackal so well. Like, of course, he knows he's going to be fine because the proctors are grooming him to, you know, be the winner and be the champion of all of the things that are happening. And so he's like, yeah, sure. I'll cut off my hand. It's fine. I'm sure they'll give me a new one immediately.
You know what I found interesting? And I want to know what you think about this. Okay. So we end up finding out, of course, that Mustang is the jackal's twin sister. Here's my thing. She definitely seems like a more capable stronger, smarter person than her brother. So why did they choose the jackal to win and not her? You know what I mean?
I don't know. That drove me insane because clearly she's the better twin in this situation. She's smarter. Yeah. She's a better leader. She can plan all of these things out. But can I tell you that the first time I read it and she left to go and get the jackal, I'm like, oh, great. Well, she's going to come back and she's going to get rid of Darrow and then she's going to be the winner. But no.
Right.
No, she came back. She's like, here's my brother. Here he is.
Ta-da! Here's a present.
Here.
And I mean, well, and that's what Pierce Brown does a really good job of making you think that that's what she's going to do, because Darrow gets so inside of his head once he finds out that she's his sister. And so that's all that he thinks about. It consumes his thoughts. And so you as the reader can't help but think the same thing. Yep, Darrow's right. She's just going to betray him. How dare she? What an evil witch she is. Mm-hmm. You know, Cassius betrayed him because of Julian, and now she's going to betray him. And Antonia betrayed him. And like, oh, so, I mean, it made sense because that was very much a pattern that was going on, except for dear sweet Severo, who was as loyal as could be. But, you know. Yes.
Fichtner did say something too about him, like, you know, get ready because you're going to be, someone else is going to like pull one over on you. So just get ready. And I'm like, oh, well, clearly he's talking about Mustang.
Mm-hmm. Nope. He did. He warns him specifically about Mustang too, because he starts to tell him something at one point and then he doesn't finish. And Daryl's like, I'm going to beat you up. Like, how can you not tell me now? But he doesn't finish, which is another reason I just love Fichtner and his character. And he's just fun.
I love Fichtner at the very beginning when he's like, okay, well, I'm going to hit you and you can't hit me back. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, fine. And then instead of hitting Fichtner, he kicks him and he's like, oh, ho, ho, you're so clever. Oh, ho, ho, I love you. Yep. Okay. Yeah. You're my type of Proctor, Fichtner.
Oh my gosh. He's perfect. And I love too, what Fichtner becomes, how his character continues in the rest of the series as well. It's really cool. We end up with, I'm not going to spoil it for everybody listening in case you haven't read the rest of the book, but we end up with something really cool with Fichtner, which is just fun, but you have to read the rest of the books to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been trying to decide if, if Darrow went, if it was totally ingenious that he went and took out Olympus, attacked Olympus and all the Proctors, or if it was just way too power hungry and over the top. Did he go too far there?
I think he went a little bit too far. Yeah. Yes. But it worked out reasonably well-ish.
Yeah, kind of.
But it was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
I felt like it seemed really crazy at the time when it was happening. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, because it felt like for a moment there was a shift from Darrow being like, I'm fulfilling EO's dream, I'm doing this for all the Reds, to I'm going to go attack all the Proctors and show them what's what and show them that I have all the power now and I can change this game and they can't rig the game. Ha ha ha, you know? And then at the end, we're back to, oh no, but I love EO and this is all for her dream. So, yeah. I don't know.
It's just a little bit of a slip up.
Yeah, you know.
Got back on track.
He did. I mean, he ends up winning, so it works.
Right.
And then he gets to be in the Arch Governor's service for however long that's going to be.
Yes.
So, which we don't know, but we'll find out. Okay. How did you feel about him and Mustang? He was very torn about it. I was kind of like, well, I mean, it's only natural. You're in these circumstances with somebody. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know?
And she nursed him back to health.
He saved her.
Yeah. And then she's singing EO's song. She's like, oh, I just watched some tiny frail girl singing it while she was being hanged. And I liked it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's a really sad part for Darrow right there. No.
I remember the first time reading it through, I thought maybe this is EO. And now EO is Mustang, but then.
That would have been a cool twist.
Right? Because, you know, in my head the whole time I'm thinking, well, this is Io's plan. Her plan is to die and become a gold and do all of this stuff. So I kind of, you know, I kind of got that idea, especially when she was singing the song, but no.
Nope, not what happens. I do like Mustang a lot though. And I'm kind of, was glad that that was developing with the two of them, especially towards the end of the book. Cause I really did like her a lot. And I feel like Darryl needs to, he's 16. Well, by the end of the book, he's like 18, but even still, super young. I know you lost your wife. I'm sorry, but you can move on. It's okay.
Oh. You can get married a few more times if you get married when you're 16. How terrible does that make me?
No, it doesn't. It's fine.
It's fine. Literally a terrible person. It's fine.
No. Okay. So you said you had a question that you wanted to ask me. So what is it?
My question that I wanted to ask you is what color you would want to be.
Oh, shoot. I should have known that was it. All right, let me see. Hold on. I have to go back in my notes. Okay.
Because I have to send you a list. I have a list.
No, I've got a good list in front of me.
Okay.
I apparently missed a couple, but I've got a list. Let me see. I just need to find my page where it describes all of them so that I can correctly pick which one I want to. I can tell you who I would not want to be.
Who would you not want to be?
Not a red and not a pink. Not want to be in there. I think the gold are like too stuck on themselves. I don't even know that I'd want to be a gold.
I don't want to be a gold either.
Let's see. The gray are soldiers. The obsidians are like the giants. Oh, but we find out in later books that they live in like an icy place. Like an icy wasteland, like Antarctica. Mm-hmm. So I could never be an obsidian because I hate cold and snow. So that wouldn't work for me.
How do you feel about the obsidians, some of them having 8 fingers on each hand?
It's a little weird. It kind of creeps me out.
What are you going to do with all the rest of those fingers?
I know. Like, I think, like, look at my hand. Like, what? I don't know what I would
do. What are you going to do with them? Like, I feel like if Darryl.
Better for climbing? I don't know.
Maybe. You know, Darryl, it's mentioned when he's a red, he's very dexterous and he can do all of these neat things with his fingers because he has to, because he has to. And that's just part of being a red. But I wonder if he had a few extra fingers, what he would be able to do with them. I feel like he would, like, his extra pinkies or thumbs would be doing their own thing. And I think he could manage having 8 fingers on each hand.
Could you imagine what more he could do with that sling blade? I mean,
he could practically hold 2 in one hand.
Yeah, he probably could. I mean, he'd just be like killing things left and right.
He would. Just killing everyone.
Okay, I got it, right? Okay, so here we go. Because I looked it all up. So the gray are soldiers. I don't want to do that. Obsidians live in Iceland. No, thank you. This says the whites are like justice and philosophy people. I don't think that way. We know the pinks, they pleasure people. No, thank you. The silvers work with money and logistics. Again, my brain does not operate in that
That's
form.
Not how my brain works.
Yellow study medicine and science. Nope. Green technology. All of these, there's like 5 of them right there that my brain just doesn't function that way. So I'm clearly out. Nope. However, here's where I would be. I would be a blue because the blues are the pilots and they navigate the ships and they're out. He calls it, he says they navigate the stars. That would be me. I am a very I have an app on my phone that shows me all of the constellations. So like I am that person. I will go outside at night with my phone and my app and like hold it up to the sky and like, okay, that's this one. That's this star. There's Jupiter. Like I am this, like, I just love the stars and celestial stuff. So I would have to be a blue. I would get to be up there all the time. That would be cool.
I like that.
So which one would you be?
A violet. I want to be a carver apparently because I thought that was really cool, but I don't know. You know, they're the creative types. You know, they're artisans. I feel like I would fit in nicely. And if I get to carve up people, I mean, it's a bonus.
That's
and great. I can add on some extra fingers to myself.
There you go.
I think it's fine.
I did think it's fun that Mickey gave some of his girls their wings. Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd be like, can you give me some wings? That'd be great.
Give me some wings and some fingers.
Yeah. I could do a lot more. Yeah, actually, you know, it would be really great. Like, what? If you could give yourself like a second, another hand, like if I had four hands somehow, you know, like double hands and could do multiple things at once, that would be awesome. Or arms maybe would be better. Like General Grievous from Star Wars.
Yes.
So I could do like all these things at once and like truly multitask. As a mom, this is like my dream.
So I don't want to upset you.
Oh boy.
About making a General Grievous comment, but if you're going to be General Grievous, then you're going to lose at least one of your hands.
This is true.
Because in Star Wars, everyone loses at least one hand.
This is very true. Rules. They all do. It is.
They
it's
all
like
do.
A Star
all
Wars rule.
Yes.
They lose their hands or like they get chopped in half.
Yes.
Anyways, back to Red Rising.
Yes. We're not in space yet.
We're
we
not
can't talk about that yet.
We do
spoiler,
get there though.
Sorry,
which is fun.
Cut that out.
No, that's okay. That's okay because it's not really a spoiler. Just to say, we eventually go into space because too, Dancer and Harmony kind of bring that up because they tell Darrow.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, because they're like, well, you can do this. You can run your own ships. You can be the captain, the pilot. You can do this. So he kind of Pierce Brown kind of lays the foundation for that. I will say, he takes us lots of different places in this series.
Good and place. I am pleasantly along for the ride.
Okay, tell you what. Here's what I want you to do. When you read, or when you're going to start to read, Iron Gold, which is book 4, tell me. Because then I will reread it. And then we can record an episode for my Patreon account. Because I was planning on doing Iron Gold. Because that's book 1 in the second trilogy for my Patreon account. So then we can splurge all we want on books 1 through 3 and book 4.
Okay.
We could spoil everything. All right. Good. All right.
Excellent.
Did you have any other final thoughts or anything you wanted to talk about with this book?
I just want to say, if you start reading it and you feel like you're like slogging through, keep going because the rest of the series, at least the original trilogy, because that's all I've read so far, it's worth it. So keep going, make it through the first one, and you will not regret it.
I agree completely. And having read through book 5, through all of the books that are currently out, I agree 100%. It is the first book is the hardest to get to. It feels the longest, but it is well worth it to push through it and get to the rest of the story because it just really starts to pick up in book 2 and just goes from there. I mean, I struggled with this one, liked it in the end, but then as soon as I hit book 2, was like, I mean, blazed through those suckers so easily because they're really, really good. So, all right. Why don't you tell everybody again where they can find you and your podcast so they can follow you and listen.
Okay. You can find Fictional Hangover. You can find us on our website at fictionalhangover.com. You can find us on Facebook at Fictional Hangover and on Instagram at Fictional Hangover, on Twitter at Fictional Hangove, no ER, because Twitter chooses to not have very many characters. So at Fictional Hangove on Twitter. We are very active on all of our social media, so come and check us out. We also have just started a Patreon.
Oh, nice. So, good.
Yeah. So, you know, give me money.
Right. We don't get paid for this, friends. Like, we do it because it's fun and we love it. But we're not like, you know, Aaron Mankey making a whole career out of it with his like 5 million podcasts, which I do love, by the way. I love him. I love his podcasts. You should listen to them. But I'm just saying, you know, we're not making lots of money off of this, friends. So Patreon support is very helpful.
But we release an episode every Wednesday and they are super full of spoilers, so just get ready.
Works for me.
You can pretend that you've read the book after listening to our episode. That's my goal, that you can pretend.
And apparently and, enough to write a book report on or something for school. So
yes, enough to pass a book report.
Very good. Well, I will put links to all of that for everybody in today's show notes so that you can go check out Amanda and her fantastic podcast. All right. And all you teenagers listening, don't cheat on your homework, even if her amazing podcast gives you all the information that you need. Okay.
If you do cheat, be sure to tell me because I want
to. Yes, so we can find out. All right. Thank you so much, Amanda, for being here today. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad you could do this with me.
Thank you for having me. I did have a lot of fun.
You're welcome. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will chat again soon. Today's podcast featured the book Red Rising by Pierce Brown. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram and Facebook, and be sure to subscribe so you get your episodes as soon as they are available. And don't forget to check out YA Book Chat's brand new Patreon account. All your support is much appreciated. YA Book Chat was created, is hosted by, and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.